Everybody was more attentive. They saw it by way of raising sitting questions, clarity sitting questions. Up to now, I think I was talking to the DJ that I don't know whether it's my feeling that there is a light in the channel. Which one would like to appreciate whatever the department is doing? And still again, we'll be calling them time and again. I think that they won't get tired by being called by us, because what we need is information. Still hoping that we might have media people around here. I want them to introduce themselves to us. Do we have any media people around here? Any media people around here? I want them to introduce themselves to us. It appears there is none. So, who are you? Where are you from? Thank you very much. You're welcome. I don't know whether we have new members, GGs, or officials from the department, except that I met the legal advisor, whom I believe if he can introduce himself to the members, the honorable members, and then new members who are around here. I believe the DG will be able to introduce them to us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The DG is just on his way from the office. My name is Anil Singh. I'm the Director for Legal Services of the Department of Arts and Culture. Thank you.
Thank you. Don't you have other members? Let them introduce themselves to the committee.
Penny Apuraju. Media Liaison of Minister Gepalo Jordan.
Thank you.
My name is Sandy Limonel. I'm the spokesperson for the ministry.
My name is Bajma Makurele. I'm the head of the Heritage Policy Department.
Hey, my name is Rosemary Mangose. I am the Chief Director for Arts, Social Development and Youth.
Dumela Simakula Khafani, Director of Translation and Editing in the National Language Service.
Mbulelo Showeni, Director of Human Language Technologies in the Department of Arts and Culture.
Kolelo Tendashe, Parliamentary Officer for the Department of Arts and Culture.
Tukisi Madlavu. Department of Arts and Culture, Chief Director, Coordination.
I'm from the water, the veteran in the department.
I think the reason why I'm doing so is because sometimes in the committee you can have people with disabilities who cannot even see people who are really introduced or are being introduced. They have to master your voices, and they know that our DG is a soft-spoken person. Somebody is harsh, somebody is sweet, so they have to recognize you by your voices. I'm happy that today at least it's a full house. Members have already introduced, unless if we can do it again for the new staff, which really, or the officials who really joined us today. We'll start from the extreme left, who was from the extreme, is it right or left to me? Right. Honorable Mansala. You were not there last week when you introduced other members. Can you? Margin, sorry.
Okay, my name is Jerome Margin.
Your mic.
My name is Jerome Margin, member of this committee and original from Limpopo.
My name is Desiree van der Waal, and I represent the Democratic Alliance on this committee. From Limpopo.
Also from the mother.
This is Mbongo from the Smart Province.
I'm from Houston. It is the whip of the committee.
My name is Lukaku George from the Northwest Province.
I'm Bengu. Thank you very much, everybody. My name is Chris Kololo. I'm from Limpopo. I'm from Mpumalanga.
Very much. I'm Chiva.
From Mpumalaya.
I'm Chiwase Josephine Tobowani from the Great Limpopo, as you know. You can see that we have more members from Limpopo, which are the custodians of culture. Thank you very much. Honorable DG, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members. And let me also just take this opportunity to announce that one of my colleagues, Victor Julius, his father, is a DCG for international relations, and his dad passed on yesterday. And so we've just been having some losses in the department, but with that as it may, I'm sure we will be able to support one another and go through this difficult time. And I'm just going to get into the progress report on the policy review process. And perhaps also before I go there, on my left is Mr. Singh, the Director for Legal Services. He also lost his dad just before we started this year. And but we are all there, we are supporting one another, we are holding each other's hands, and we are hugging each other, and we are also working. And the department is strong, and I think the work that is going on is there's good quality work that is going on. There's a lot of enthusiasm, and colleagues get excited about every time we say we are going to report and to portfolio committee, and I think I must express the collective happiness from the department about the attention that we continue to receive from the portfolio committee. yesterday, the last time we were here, we were reporting on the issues of social cohesion and national identity. And but the reporters focus on other matters of social cohesion, and They decided to be naughty, and but and today we will be reporting on the policy review process, as well as the legislative review. And I think this is very, very important, because it then sets a program as well for the legislative program for 2008. And we will get into a legislative review as the second part of the presentation. And Chairperson, it's been quite a while that the department has come to the portfolio committee with any legislative issues, and I do hope that we will have some adequate time to actually go over the legislative review. So I will be a little bit faster on the policy review process, and because really it is touching on broad thematic issues, but perhaps we need to spend a little bit more time on the legislative review. I don't know if that approach is acceptable to you, Chairperson.
I believe it is well understood, and then the committee agrees on it. Would like, before maybe we start our work of the business for the day, would request the chief whip of the, not chief, the whip of the committee to say some few words regarding your announcement. Over to you, Comrade Honorable.
Now, I just want to, on behalf of the committee, to express our heartfelt condolences to both Mr. Singh and Mr. Julius, if you could please communicate that to Mr. Julius on their behalf.
Okay. Thank you.
And what is the feeling of the older members, honorable members? Over to you, DG.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. We are going to go straight into the heart of the matter, and brief the portfolio committee on the policy review process. And let me start by saying that we appreciate this, because we have been undertaking this process for over a year now, and it's we have had an opportunity to brief our political principals. We've had an opportunity to brief MINMEC and technical committee, and we're now briefing portfolio committee, and for us we need to move towards the conclusion on the matter of the review of the policy. But first things first, the outline of today's presentation, first we will give you the purpose of the presentation, and secondly give you a background to the policy review process, and then give you an oversight on the executive summary of the policy review process. And then we will get into a little bit on heritage legislative review. We're not going to spend much time here in this presentation on the heritage legislative review, because when we get into the legislative review as the second part of the presentation, you'll notice that a significant, almost all of it, focuses on heritage, archives, and libraries review. And this is precisely because a significant about out of the 23 acts that govern the portfolio of arts and culture, 18 pieces of legislation are heritage legislation, starting with the 1964 Act of a Heraldic Act. And we will just give you a bit on the heritage legislative review, and then get onto the recommendations of recommendation on arts, culture, and heritage policy challenges and conclusions. Today we're here to brief the committee on the progress made to date by the department on the review of its policies, including the 1996 White Paper on Arts, Culture and Heritage, and all the legislation that of course emanated out of that policy framework. We will also do an executive summary of the policy review process, touch upon heritage legislative review. As a bit of a background, 2 years ago, MINMEC mandated the technical committee to initiate a comprehensive review of arts, culture and heritage policy, including the 1996 White Paper on Arts, Culture and Heritage, as well as the legislation that has been promulgated and implemented since 1994. The aim of the comprehensive review was to look at the effectiveness, the efficiency, and relevance of policy and legislation in the arts and culture and heritage sector. Secondly, the review was aimed at providing a platform for the development of creative and appropriate solutions in response to challenges which we were facing in implementing the policy of the White Paper on Arts, Culture and Heritage. The Technical Committee established then as a response to the instruction that came from MINMEC. We were then tasked to establish a policy review committee that would develop terms of reference and facilitate a policy review process. We commissioned researchers to study and assess the impact of various aspects of arts, culture and heritage policies. And broad consultations across the spectrum throughout the provinces and local government and and other consultative forums were held with all the relevant stakeholders in this sector. The policy review process and legislative review process focused on 7 themes and as a framework that was going to guide us in doing this work. The first theme that we focused on was the arts, culture and heritage legislative framework. By that, what we meant was we looked at the legislation that was there, and we said there was a need to interrogate that and see where we have impacted and where we have not impacted, and where were the shortcomings and things of that nature. And we also, of course, within the legislative framework, looked at areas where there are, for example, duplications of mandates, duplications of functions, and one would find those things when one looks at, for example, the National Heritage Council Act, South African Heritage Resources Act, and in some cases we're looking at pieces of legislation that were almost out of touch with present-day South Africa, like the Heraldic Act of 1964. And we also needed to have a look at a review of arm's length approach. And this has always, it's an ongoing debate, and I'm sure it will be, as long as arm's length is on the table, we will always have those kind of conversations. And because one of the things that was problematic here was the fact that people were saying the framework autonomy or arm's length approach has produced an unintended consequence. And that consequently was subsidy without accountability. And people were not actually understanding the fact that the arm's length policy was actually intended to address the issues of the freedom of speech, all right, and artistic expression. And but the situation we're finding ourselves is that people were saying, give me the money, let me do what I want to do, and then I will, and that's good enough, I'm blessed for me. And people were also saying, but do we really need to review this thing, because the performance PFMA is actually enforcing and reinforcing accountability in terms of the institution. So those are the kind of debates that were happening around that second team. And of course, the third team is one which is always very exciting, but it's a very difficult one to pin down, which is the contribution of this sector to the economy and economic development. And these are issues of areas of creative industries, the leveraging of heritage for economic development, for example, in tourism, and so forth. The fourth theme was the role of art, culture, and heritage continentally and internationally. And basically, we were looking at cultural diplomacy there. We have got a significant number of cultural agreements which we have signed with a number of countries. And some of these agreements are actually delivering the goods, as it were, and are contributing to vibrancy in the area of arts and culture. They are agreements which are not as dynamic as others, but for political reasons, it is important that they should be maintained. For example, some of the cultural agreements we have with the continent and the ties with South to South, and they are not as dynamic as they could be. But we would like to leverage those a little bit more. I think the area of opportunity here is India, Brazil, South Africa, and I think that we need to focus very much on that on that area of cultural diplomacy. But also in doing the review, one of the things we notice is that although we have got foreign policy as a country, and it is well understood across government, we do not have any position in terms of the role of cultural diplomacy in supporting the political diplomatic initiatives of the country. For example, if you are prioritizing the African continent, what is it that you are doing culturally to enhance those specific activities? And we have done a little bit with the development of the African World Heritage Fund, the restoration of the manuscripts and the building of the library in Mali, the Timbuktu, which is the World Heritage Site. But I think that there could still be a little bit more coherence and an articulation in the area of cultural diplomacy. Then the fifth team we reviewed, there was a review of human resources, research and development needs for art, culture, and heritage sector. I think that this is one area that tends to be generally overlooked. That is the skills within the sector. And because everybody thinks that we can all stand up, get up and sing. You know, we can all get up and drive. And it's actually not like that at all. Well, there is a certain element of it, but there is a serious shortage of skills. For example, if you look at South African Heritage Resources Agency, we have got only one maritime archaeologist employed to look all the coastal area of South Africa. And this is a really, really specialized field. And I hope that when we get into the next briefings on the underwater cultural heritage and that convention, we will deal with some of these things. When we look at the capacity in our museum, it's aging, it's not being replaced adequately enough, and also linked to that, you find that people do not want to come and get into this sector because the salaries are not attractive at all. So the area of human resources is a very critical one. And when you look at the skills for managing cultural institutions, at times we are falling short. We have just started a study done by PricewaterhouseCoopers, that's right, and we're briefing them last week to look at skills audits in the heritage sector throughout the country, and not only in the institutions that are funded by the Department of Arts and Culture, but to look at what is happening at provincial institutions, to look at what is happening at local government as well, because this is really about protecting the national estate. And so we spent a little bit of time on that in terms of policy review as one area that requires focus. The question of research is one that is also that over the last 10 years we have not really impacted on, and the research is not connected amongst the universities themselves. And when you look at institutions, for example, such as the Human Sciences Research Council, you find that in the area of arts and culture, there is very little research that is happening. We do not know, for example, what economic indicators we should look to determine how arts and culture contribute to the economic development of the country. Last week I did indicate the fact that we have got no social indicators to show us whether the nation is cohesing or not. I don't know if the honorable members in the last couple of months have read anything that they found quite intellectually stimulating in the area of arts and culture. There just doesn't seem to be intellectual engagement in this regard. So we are very much locked up into what I said last week, funding framework. People want, what they want to know is like, how much am I going to get? Can I do my production? The intellectual exercise, all right, that goes within the area of arts and culture at the present moment, it's just not forthcoming. There used to be magazines, for example, such as the Critical Arts, the Staff Writer, and all those that dedicated themselves to the artistic and cultural expression of the country. But nowadays, you just don't find that at all, anything at all. If you do read anything that resembles an articulation on South African aesthetic, you just get it from reviews by the journalists, and it ends there. Yes, and there's Candile here too. So, the sixth matter that we dealt with was, of course, the role of arts and culture in social development, social cohesion, national identity, and so forth, and I'm not going to bother on that because we presented comprehensively on that last week. And then lastly, we did a review, the seventh theme was a review on funding and financing models. And consultations as well as the research study were conducted, resulting in a discussion document that was used as the basis for the National Policy Review Workshop. And the review workshop was held in May 2007. The national workshop reflected upon the Arts and Culture Task Group. That task group was set up in 1995. And honorable members, you will recall that this was the time of the Department of Arts, Culture, Science and Technology. And the first thing that was done before we moved into the white paper on arts and culture was the setting up of the Arts Culture Task Group, the ACTEC group. And then from that process of ACTEC group of consultation, then came the white paper in 1996. The report of ACTEC was tabled in 95. The white paper on arts and culture and was then promulgated and adopted in 1996. And it was also noted during the policy review workshop that a revision of all existing legislation on arts, culture and heritage was partially done, hence other existing legislations were currently under review. Development centers and museums, well, there was a matter that was raised by ACTEC, for example, that we needed to look into the development of centers and museums for the other indigenous languages, and that is the nine African official languages, because Afrikaans, as an African language, was already catered for in the museum with the African Style Museum in Pau. And then there is an the output in Kuhemstown, which is the National English Literary the Museum. So the ACTEC report said that we needed to make sure that all the languages had similar facilities. But instead of going the way of establishing museums for each language, the department moved towards the development of language research centers, LRCDs, language research centers and development, for development. And we did that to address that issue. Also, the ACTEC report had suggested that we needed to come up with a framework for tax incentives that would boost the sponsorship for arts and culture. And this was mainly derived from the models of funding the arts, such as the United States model. But the Treasury did not want to make special concessions for arts and culture, and actually they are not keen at all to make that concession. And so it's something that it is still outstanding. And ACTEC also, you know, when we, during 95, there was a lot that was being said about how artists die in poverty, and how artists are not able to bury themselves, and that as a department we needed to come with a social security and a protection framework for artists. And this has generated a lot of debate, as a matter of fact, because some people say, but why should we make a special dispensation for the artists? Why is there no special dispensation for nurses, for sports people and other? Why specifically artists? Another matter that always used to come up when people are discussing this issue is that you know, at times these artists, they live large, you know, when their spouses are fed. And forget to take financial responsibility, you know. And you find that, for example, with a new generation, you know, so when somebody gets a deal and they get 1 million, the first thing they need is a car that is 600,000. All right, and then they want a house that is 1.5. So that artist is already in debt
before he actually received the what they call it a kind of an upfront payment on a deal. So there are issues of personal accountability, financial responsibility that people need to take on board. And and of course, there is also a serious substance abuse within the sector that needs to be addressed. Because while people are young and vibey and doing all these things, they really do not take care of themselves. And these substance abuse activities do take a toll on a person. And then when that moment arrives, then they say the Department of Arts and Culture must step in. And should the Department of Arts and Culture really be doing that? Or should the Department of Arts and Culture, should that be establishing frameworks that then can begin to do that? I'm saying it because we have tried unsuccessfully, one with Sandlam, to create a funeral benefits, and we also tried with Old Mutual, and generally people just don't respond. So the proposal to formulate a new legislation for social security and protection of artists has not really been implemented, and this is in light of the national social security strategy and framework that is has been developed by government. The technical committee then, in looking at all of these issues, some of them outstanding and some of them haven't been implemented, decided that we needed to have a two-pronged approach. One, we needed to have an overview of art, culture and heritage policy and legislation, but we also needed to have a specific focus on the legislative framework. And the technical committee also noted that the heritage, archives and library sector in particular was faced by challenges on both policy development and legislation. And this is because when you look or you read the white paper on arts, culture and heritage, the 1996 white paper, you'll find that to a large extent, almost without just throwing numbers, almost 80% of the content of the white paper is silent on the issues of heritage. There is a lot on performing arts, the visual arts, every other thing, but when it comes to heritage, the white paper on actually articulates or expresses a point on the part only two paragraphs, and it just also says that further work needs to be done in terms of heritage, and I don't know whether at that time people found heritage to be too sensitive to deal with, and because there are some people were starting to say, what's going to happen with the anxiety of Louis Bosch in front of Parliament? What's going to happen with Wampol in Church Square in Pretoria? And people were thinking that this is a hot potato. So, and like all task teams and committees do, when they deal with a hot potato, they defer it to the future. And so so when you read the white paper on arts and culture, it's on performing arts, visual arts, funding frameworks, but there is a shortage of leadership in terms of heritage. So we were asked that we needed to take a specific look in heritage. Therefore, TIC resolved that a parallel process was required in order to deal effectively with all aspects of heritage archives and libraries, including areas of duplication and gaps in heritage policies and legislation. I'm going to go quickly over the themes because I think I had the theme one, art, culture and heritage legislative framework, really the main issue, the first challenge there that people were talking about was the issue of transforming public entities whether the transformation has happened and how far has the transformation has gone. The second challenge was the aligning legislation to national priorities, and the third challenge was, of course, reviewing existing legislation just to eliminate inconsistencies. I'm going to run through this because when we get particular to the issues of legislation, we're going to get into detail when we deal with that issue. And then challenge number four under team one was the strengthening mandate of institutions. And here, for example, as I alluded, the National Heritage Council and the South African Heritage Resources Act, they both have got a similar mandate, for example, on repatriation. And at times we find that the organizations start putting on each other. And also the question of clarifying the role, mandate, and status of performing arts bodies as declared cultural institutions under the Cultural Institutions Act was something also that needed to be articulated. And that was under theme number one. Under theme number two, it was, of course, the issue of the review of arm's length approach. And I had talked to that and what the concerns were. But we are thinking that within the existing framework of the PFMA, the issues of accountability can be adequately addressed. And then the second challenge on the team two was strengthening governance and accountability in public entities. And this also touched upon the capacities and the competencies of our board and council members. And also, one of the things that came out here, which was quite interesting, was the fact that when we did a quick look at the CEOs of our institutions, we found that some of them, although they were in senior positions, they were functioning without performance agreements. And these were the issues that we said we needed to look at. But that matter doesn't require policy. It just requires new policies. It just requires us to be able to say, with grants or subsidies going to the institution, certain things, steps of accountability, need to be taken. One of which is that the CEO must have a 3-year or whatever performance agreement with the board of the institution. And the third challenge that was addressed was aligning public entities with government planning and reporting systems. This we have already addressed, and because we have just linked our institutions now to our medium-term expenditure framework. The third theme, the contribution of art, culture, and heritage to the economy. The first challenge that was addressed there was how to optimize the economic value of art, culture, and heritage with a view to this sector contributing towards sustainable economic development. The second challenge was improving integration and cohesiveness in economic planning programs, and this really is about streamlining activities within government. For example, there are lots of work that is being done by the Department of Trade and Industry in the area of creative industry, and some of it doesn't really talk to the work that is being done in the Department of Arts and Culture in developing creative industry. And there is a lot of work that is being done, for example, again, by the Department of Communication in increasing in terms of local content on television. But one cannot talk of increasing local content and not impacting on creative industries and therefore and other aspects of the work that we do. I think that we are well on our way to addressing some of these challenges, because there's a new cluster that has been established, which is co-chaired by the Department of Arts and Culture and the Department of Communication, and which is called the Foresight ICT Cluster. Is that correct? ICT Cluster. Which looks at ICT Cluster, which look at ICT in this sector. So the Department of Communication is looking at the infrastructure, the hardcore infrastructure, and we are looking at the content of that. So we should look into what goes on television screens, how do we promote creative industries, how we will impact on music, on television, script development, and productions, and so forth. And challenge number three was improving research capacity and data collection, and I had already addressed myself to that. And then challenge number four was improving levels of skills and capacity building, and also addressed that matter. And challenge five was improving channels of communication within and amongst all stakeholders. And the team four identified the issue of developing a third challenge was developing a strategy for our cultural diplomacy agenda. And second challenge was building South Africa's cultural profile internationally. And I have talked to both issues of team four. The team five was review of human resources, research and development needs of arts and culture and heritage. And the first challenge that we had to address there was improving human resources development in the sector. And I've already alluded to some of the steps that are being undertaken to address that. And developing and implementing the National Research Program for Arts Forums in general and for social cohesion in particular. And this is, again, as I said in the previous briefing, it's an issue really that needs a special focus, the issue of research. And we are really not doing adequate research on art, culture and heritage. Team six, the art, culture and social development. I wouldn't like to dwell very much onto this, because that team six is a presentation that was done last Tuesday on social cohesion. And then team seven, funding and financing models. And this will always be a challenge that will remain with us, because people would always, there will never be enough funding for the arts. But I think that looking at what the National Arts Council is doing, the National Heritage Council, National Film and Video Foundation, the money that we leverage through cultural agreements, for example, with countries such as the Netherlands, Belgium, Sweden, Norway, UK, Germany, and many others, that there is a significant stream of resources that are coming into funding the arts. Where I think the challenge
is we, at one stage we need to engage with the lottery because there is an under expenditure in the lottery in terms of arts and culture, and there is actually quite a great need there. I would have loved to see a significant amount of money from the lottery going towards addressing programming of the within the community arts centers. And I would have loved to see some money from the lottery going to address the issues of literacy campaigns and thus and reading. And it's a challenge that we need to look at. Also, honourable members, while we are on the issue of funding, one of the observations that are made. And is the fact that there isn't enough funding or very little funding that goes to fund children's programs in arts and culture. We only start making our interventions at youth level. And so that it's very difficult, I mean, even to go to, when you go to our institutions, you don't get children's theatre. At Market Theatre, at the State Theatre, at Artscape, we do not get children do not register on our radar. So and whatever interventions that should have been made, then are not made. I was talking to my colleagues at the National Arts Council, and that there is no specific allocation for even for children's books, development of children's books, and so that can children not getting attention, and I think that in terms of funding is one of the areas that we need to shift towards, and so that they can start getting some. Early childhood program for arts and culture. And the third challenge, of course, within the area of funding was developing support mechanisms for audience development, local content, and creative industries. And for me, you know, to start looking at audience development when you are getting people who have already developed the habit of going to watch. To go to Orlando Stadium, and it's going to be very hard to remove them from Orlando Stadium to Funda Center. And people must be able to get those choices very early. You start with audience development, not through a telephone marketing, but through infusion of the arts and culture at an early age. And I think that I mean, if you look at the successful Kwaito generation now, and most of it is coming from Northwest, and precisely because the Mabanas did a lot there. You know, the contemporary Dobek art scene of 23 to 27 is really being led by Northwest. It's absolutely quite fascinating. And I think that the role played by the Mabanas there played a significant part of that. But also when you talk to them, they would also tell you that I was in Mabana, Mabato, I was in Mabana, Lurusi, whatever. But they still pay homage to the Mabanas. So that's why the community arts centers become quite critical within the funding framework. And if you could leverage a significant amount of money that will go into programming within the community art centers, I think we would have gone a long way to address that challenge. And lastly, honorable members, that technical committee then mandated a policy review committee to examine these recommendations and identify short-term, medium-term, and long-term issues on various of these teams. Examine whether the AMFES approach and associated recommendations
are still applicable and relevant in the context of the Public Finance Management Act. Develop a final report on the first phase of policy review on arts, culture and heritage. And the policy review committee will carry out this task before the end of 2008. And as I've said, we have reported to MINMEC, and we have also gone back in other forums to report on these processes. And I think there needs to come a time that we wrap up on things and probably look at a publication that would articulate in much less bureaucratic detail the outcomes of that specific policy review process. But I think that we have been at this for almost 2 years now, and I don't think that we will be able to get any more further surprises beyond what we have. We have got a good sense of the issues that came up, and most of them are actually quite spot on. And I think that at least for the next MTEF starting with 2008-2009 financial year, we should be able to begin to say how will we address these challenges that have been raised here, and whether our budgeting would then reflect those specific areas of concern that have been identified through the policy review process. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, DG. I believe the members were more attentive, which sort of like one believes that whatever they've done, your presentation was really, really, really eye-opener to us. It's like when a father or a parent at home renovate his house, sometimes forgetting to move some certain issues where they were. And then you find that the paint just move around that article which was not moved or which was not even replaced somewhere. I'm just citing that if there are such things which members could be able to raise. I have a concern as far as the private sectors are concerned. It appears as if nothing was said. What is their contribution as far as libraries are concerned, as well as the NGOs, because of that sometimes they claim a lot, not even accounting to the whether to the department of the more referred to us as the parliament. One would like to sort of like advise or request or clarity if they have any, like you said, we talked about the extending of a hand, whatever you said, which means that are they not also supposed to contribute something to the department as far as libraries are concerned? I remember 1 year when we visited somewhere, I can't remember whether it's China, where we've seen, you know, the libraries which are really meant for the young ones, these kids, they used to be taken to the libraries where they play their things, they read these small magazines, you know, even the toys in that library. One would like to sort of like indicate that example. Because if maybe private sectors are really contributing something to the community. Over to you, honorable members. Honorable Dorothy.
You know, this
listening to the presentation and also looking at what has been raised in this policy review process. I think we are way behind. We are way behind in the time that we have been in this government. What is saying is that I know that previously it was much science and technology. But I think I want to agree that you need to start at an early age, you know, to instill some of the concepts that are here. And also, having heard from your presentation mentioning other departments, why is curious to know how involved are these other departments? Because the task here is huge and it involves a lot of, you know, courses, very courses. So I think it will also be helpful to hear as to how do you interact with other departments, because I think even the president has always alluded to the fact that coordination of activities is very important. You also spoke about skills. I want to know to what extent are you interacting with labor? Because if you are going to expect art and culture to be responsible for the cost involved in all these intentions that you know, good intentions that you want to, because I think culture is very important. And yes, it is true that we have to start at an early stage. How much know what you do with social services, because you also talk about self childhood, and that's why it is also the responsibility of social services. But again, my question is, are we involved in it so that we can be able to take care of together? And then coming to the artist dispensation. I think here we are comparing apples and bananas, because we can't compare artists with nurses. And yes, I agree that, you know, they live beyond their means. But don't you think they need education? Because we are coming from a culture where there was no opportunity for them, you know, to access, you know, these opportunities. And what are we doing to assist them? Because what you are saying is very true. And I think it's becoming worse. Every day we see artists dying, very poor. And I think this is our duty as this government to assist them. So thank you.
Honorable Mate, followed by Bengu, and then followed by Takato.
Thank you, Comrade Chair. Mine is just a clarification. The Technical Intergovernmental Committee, if I could get the structure of that committee, who serves in the intergovernmental, provincial, local, and or is it across departments, and which departments are those? And then from the policy review committee, how is it structured? I think that will be, if I can understand that, it will give me an idea of the possibilities of succeeding or even failing. Because usually people don't take arts and culture very seriously. situation whereby they will ask whether you think we must stop building the classrooms and build the theater. So if the composition of these structures themselves is not the right combination, then we might find ourselves moving in circles. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jefferson. I must say that I'm very impressed, DG, with your presentation. Particularly because it seems very clear that you are now having a very well-defined vision, particularly in terms of cultural renaissance, because it's one area, well, for me particularly, which has been a problem, that ever since we've had in this country cultural imperialism, and we haven't had actually a national mechanism to counter that. I mean, a big section of our population are culturally disadvantaged. And you see, once therefore your department begins to address that kind of gap, I mean, it actually is now beginning to actually realize the very crucial area that it needs to engage in a very forceful manner. And I would imagine that perhaps, you know, cultural programs, as you have well, you know, defined them here, I mean, we take off the ground as soon as possible. I've always debated this in some other, you know, places, also alone, as to when you engage, when we are to engage in this exercise, how far should we go? Perhaps you can educate me, because we have in this country a situation of cultural diversity, and we are always lectured that we need to appreciate cultural diversity, but in the process of cultural improvement, cultural rebirth, in that process, particularly as you talk of African culture, because I imagine you have to juxtapose that with European culture. In that process, which culture becomes disadvantaged and advantaged? Because you see, what cultural diversity is important, people mustn't forget that a certain culture was actually disadvantaged. But when you engage in the process of advantaging that culture, another culture begins to say that it's being disadvantaged. I was debating in my mind as to how do you actually harness that in terms of actually balancing that kind of situation. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me also echo the sentiments of my colleagues by thanking the DG for the impressive presentation. You are talking about reviewing human resources.
Mm-hmm.
And our government, my government, has committed itself to eradicate poverty and have unemployment by 2040. What do you really mean by reviewing human resources? Would we achieve this Congress government, given 2014 that is around the corner? Thank you.
I'm going to comment on their government. Your party, the same
government priorities at the same time. Thank you, DG, Acting Chair. There's always a lot said in strategies and plans and policies, whatever. I'm always interested in the implementation and the results achieved. And, you know, over the last 4 years, we did achieve some, but I personally don't believe enough. I'm sure there's nobody in the department that would disagree with me. We always wanted to do better, but of course there were problems and we didn't know where they were. But if I may just say one thing, I think, you know, in any business, and especially in government, there's a certain thing of creating expectations that can be extremely dangerous. And I find that one of the things that, for example, factory, you know, exemption and stuff like that, extremely dangerous, because you would always hear people, hear us saying it, and then, you know, comes with demand. While if you look at the broader spectrum of governing the country, there are maybe more needs or higher priorities of these things that should be given, like for the safety of people, for example, that's an opinion. But also on the issue about children's theatre, and I couldn't agree with you more, but I think this is where there are cross-cutting issues with the education department and the curriculum that should be really, really being interrogated with whoever is for the minister in the bundle's office. The other issue is also, I hear your concern for artists who never had an opportunity, and in most fields of life today, and the economy, is that people nowhere, not only artists, have ever had an opportunity to be educated how to spend their earnings. So that's an overall social issue, I would say. But I think your focus in the department should be in the promotion of the arts and culture sector, and that should not be the highest of all the priorities, surely, and I'm sure you're not intending it to do that. The issue about libraries, you know by now, and the gentleman from the Minister's office, that I always fight for the library issue and the literacy idea that I share with the Minister, that we should create a culture of reading. Because you can't reach them even with a computer at the end of the day, and what's going to happen is you then. The issue of libraries, I mean, I raised it just before we closed in November in the House, and that is the issue that the money that actually from the department goes to the provinces, because libraries are a provincial matter, it's not a national matter, except for our national library and so forth. It's the control of that money, and I say to the Minister in the House, it should be a specific grant, okay. Conditional grant. Because if it is not, it will not be spent on libraries. I mean, it's clear, see. And it is difficult for the Minister, of course, to stand with a whip behind every single department in the country, but that is a problem. And the Minister actually replied that day in the House that how much was done, and there were hardly anything done in most of the provinces, from the provincial department. And then the National gets blamed for it, because they see the money coming from us, and in fact, they just, I don't know where that thing is. I'd actually like to know. And that is our problem, where that lies. Okay, I disagree 100% with you, specifically on the private sector, because there are ways that you're flowing off in libraries, but no, that's my opinion. But I am, as I said, I'm also concerned about all the boards, not necessarily a department appointment of boards. The Minister is saying, wait, not certain boards, of course. But I mean, the sooner we can get the boards active and working, we're going into a difficult year politically. I mean, we aren't going to see all these legislations through once again, because, you know, I mean, most people will just come and go into election work. So, it's the challenges that are there.
For
the
calendar. Yeah, I mean, it is there. Thank you. Yes, I was on the block. Sir, I'm thanking you for all what you've done. And I think there are some areas that we forget. As we are visiting school, the learners there who through African culture. We're very saying that we, the lawmakers, we don't care for them. All what is talked about is mathematics and the science and technology, all that. And they say if there are class children at school, they are these people, those who are doing math and science. And yet they also excel in art and culture, but they get no encouragement from anything. They told me about designers, writers, and all painters and all these other things. They don't get any encouragement from this department. And of course, no one knows about them. Except that I went to this school and I found that there are learners doing art and culture. And when I asked them, they said, you are the first person to talk about art and culture. In all these other schools that I went to, they said, you are the first person to speak about art and culture. They said, it's a forgotten subject at all. But we hear you in Parliament saying art and culture is fascinating and debating about art and culture and all the alike. But they are not encouraged in any way to go on and do these artistic things and be put on the map like the science and technology. And yet if they are specific areas, that's where they also excel. Now they feel learning about culture and art is not what. I don't know if it happened that before. They mentioned the designers, that they are African designers, and they can do like any other designer, the Chinese designers and but they don't get that love from us. Thank you.
Let Maruleka start.
let me also thank you for the work that you are busy doing. I just wanted to, you raised two concerns that I noticed, and that is aging skills, especially in Asia. That would be very difficult to be replaced. And intellectual debate, the absence of intellectual debate around class and culture. I just wanted to find out, in fact, I think on both these, how much work or interaction do we have between our department and your academic institution? Don't you think that, you know, if we maybe do more work around this, we may be able to address some of the concerns that you have raised. I know you spoke about what would really attract people with the necessary skills, actually money. But I think maybe if we develop some relationship with this institution that we may have it already, but maybe we should need to defend it and see how far we can go with the challenges that you were talking about. I wanted to find out on the consultation, you know, if you could just explain this process of consultation. I know that you say There was a workshop held in 2007. How wide is it?
Honorable Sengu, the second bike.
Thank you, Chair. So kind of you. This is very short. In fact, I forgot. DG of the National Heritage Research Program, I must congratulate you. To me, that we should have had it yesterday. We should have had it yesterday because there are so many issues that need to be researched. For instance, I have in mind right now the issue of social cohesion, the issue of social capital formation, the issues of Ubuntu, the issues of etc., which actually have to be researched and promoted. And I'm going to ask you, how do we set up in FADC in terms of promoting our cultural heritage? Because we do need to have it promoted. It should be researched, but it has to be promoted by way of educating the public about who we are, who we come from, and where we're going to.
Your response, DJ,
I think it's with your
team. All right. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm going to be also brief on this one. Perhaps let me start not answering the questions and not in the order that they come, but and start with the issues of encouraging the students to take the arts. This has been a challenge. I went to school at Fremantle in Lady Fred, just outside of Queenstown. And I spent 5 years in that boarding school. And there was nothing, absolutely nothing, for us to do the arts. So we started organizing ourselves, choirs, and we got a little bit of money from our pocket money, and I remember going to Queenstown, being asked to go and buy some LPs, and one of the LPs I bought was the Bee Gees. And all the things, and when I was finishing Form 5, then matric, I was asked what I was going to do, and I said I was going to vet, and I'm going to do a theater degree. And my friend said, why are you wasting your brain? My teacher said to me, why are you wasting your brain? You know. And so I'm raising this because at least in my family, there was a situation where some members of the family said, but explain, what is it that you're going to do? But why are you going to start this thing when Gibson Kendra did it without having a degree? And some said to me, and I do not intend to offend anyone, Chairperson. Somebody said to me, but why do you choose to go and study theater instead of going to study theology? And then I said, but explain. And they said to me, well, the effect is the same. Because with theology, you have got the pulpit is your stage, your congregation, you have got a guaranteed congregation every Sunday, which is your audience. And guess what? You have guaranteed monthly income. But as an actor, you don't. So is this kind of things that people need to address? And some of them, they are stereotypes, and some of them are just about pure ignorance. But I think, again, if we do not have a curriculum within schools,
we won't be able to address this thing. And I think that and I do not want to impose on the committee. And I think that it would be quite informative if the DG, my colleague, my teacher of education, can be invited by the portfolio committee so that we can talk about the issues of Asian culture in the curriculum of the school, and we can get a sense of what it is that they are doing. Yeah. Equally important would be an invitation to the CEO of the SABC, who's very, very passionate about the issues of art and culture, by the way. Very, very passionate. And we need to have to be able to have a conversation that can say, if we are talking about the role of SABC, what does that mean in terms of local content? What does it mean in... because SABC can begin to help us address this issue of assisting artists. Because if you are increasing local content, you are then putting bread on the table for artists. You know? And so the increase of local content, the improvement of collecting of royalties, the improvement of intellectual property regime, because at the present moment, GTI is really not concentrating on that side, it's concentrating on patents and trademarks, and it's not helping us move in this direction. Although I must say that last week there was an article on Business Day that GTI now is developing a framework for BEE for the film industry, which is actually quite good. So I think it's very important that people should be given an opportunity to learn at an early age, to be given a career guidance. But in the high school I was at, nobody could give me any career guidance. Nobody. You know, and then I just thought that I was an eccentric young African. You know, and at one stage, I remember I made contact with a Professor Gruber, who was a professor of music at Fort Hare, because I just said I thought maybe I might just go and study music, and he invited me to Rhodes, and I was hitchhiking from Queenstown to Rhodes. And people just were not understanding, you know. Yes, I was, to that as it may, here I am, and I'm quite a happy African, and I enjoy the art. I am passionate, but I understand that if people are given a chance, and if people, you invest in people, and good can come out of this. Contribution by the private sector. The private sector is contributing, and although there is no incentive for arts and culture, there is an incentive for education. So it's easier for the private sector to be involved in educational activities than in arts and culture activities. So there is an involvement. But also, a few years ago, we started an initiative called Business Art South Africa, and which links up business community with arts and culture initiatives. Standard Bank is there, NetBank is there, Anglo-American is there. Quite a number of Johannesburg Stock Exchange companies are there. What is very discouraging is a lack of involvement by the BEE companies in arts and culture. You know? And I don't understand. And there seems to be absolutely no interest whatsoever on any matter that are cultural. And I think that's why I'm saying that there is a certain level of intellectual engagement that needs to happen in the area of arts and culture so that we can ask certain questions so that we can get specific answers on some of these issues. We would welcome an opportunity to actually come to the portfolio committee to present on the work that is being done by the business arts and culture. And it's actually quite a good amount of work that happens there. Yes, I agree with the honourable member. The task is huge and costly, and coordination of activities. We always say in government, let's coordinate. But it is, I don't know. We coordinate after a certain point. We get paralyzed and then we try and go back. And so the levels of engagement at times, they are tentative. And at times they are good. The work that is happening, for example, now with the social cluster, I'm very happy with the work that we're doing within the social cluster. There's really good coordination that is happening there. I hope that, what we have finalized on the information society cluster, that also there will be good work there. We are working with the CITAS, with the Ministry of with the Department of Labour, but there's some work that is happening there, but I don't know whether, well, let me not say I don't know. There's a general observation that the CITAS are not delivering up to their maximum. And the TIC structure, it is made up of the heads of departments from the provinces of arts and culture. So we report to the MECs then and the minister at MINMEC. But Mr. Matlabu will elaborate a little bit later on that, the TIC structure and the issues of the committee. Affirming of multiculturalism and it's a very difficult task, and because I always say that as South Africans we are very bad at affirming one another, and at times we move from a position of saying be reasonable, see things my way. And if I don't see things your way, then I'm not listening. But I think, again, it goes to the question we were asking last week. What kind of a society do we want to see ourselves as South Africans? When we say we're South Africans, what is it actually? What do we mean? And how do we want to see ourselves? And when you look at the infrastructure, the cultural infrastructure in the country, it still has got a 394 legacy. Whether you are happening to look at the libraries, whether you are happening to look at the theatres, whether you are happening, but there is that. So, for me, in order for us to affirm that multiculturalism, we need to have an honest look, and first of all, an audit of the arts and culture infrastructure in the country. Where is the arts and culture infrastructure in the country, and what is it doing? Because that arts and culture infrastructure, that's where multiculturalism is going to find itself, is going to find platform for itself to express or whatever itself to the nation. So. I think we need to interrogate the arts and culture infrastructure and say what it is that it's doing in terms of promoting multiculturalism in the country. The second matter that we think we need to be able to do is to actually do an audit of the actual funding in the country and say, is the funding of the arts and culture in the country actually affirming multiculturalism? And for example, if you look at the patterns of spending or distribution of funding by the National Arts Council, a significant portion, almost over 60% of the National Arts funding, National Arts Council funding in the country is absorbed by three provinces. It's Gauteng, it's Western Cape, and KZN. All right. And are we funding multiculturalism? You know? And when we're sending, we say we are funding multiculturalism, what is it that you know? I would very much like to look at not only funding how we are funding multiculturalism, but also how we are funding various art forms that help us to articulate that multiculturalism. And of course, the issue of skills would be linked to that. The Honorable Member asked if we will achieve our goals by 2014. I don't know. I don't like giving improvised answers. But perhaps we can also go back and check what it is that we have done now. And we are able then to make some estimates and see whether we are able to meet our goals by 2014. And and then the department and academic institutions, yes, I think it's a relationship that needs to be nurtured. And I think that perhaps we can even begin to influence certain kinds of research to be done, and through fellowships, bursaries, and so forth, but but also these academies that are around, and that we need to be able to sit with and talk, but an engagement with academic institutions would go a long way. I think the only thing that one needs to be careful of there is that at times academics would like you to find their own research, not what you want, and that is always a problem, but I don't think it's an insurmountable problem. Mr. Matav will organize, will respond to the issues of the TIC structure and the consultations that have been undertaken in terms of the policy review. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Member. I think the issue of the CIC has been sufficiently dealt with in that it constitutes, as members of the committee would know, the basis for coordination of our work at national, provincial, and provincial level. Actually, the manifestation of how we implement the intergovernmental relations action strategy. So at that level, it serves that particular purpose. But the TIC is also a structure that is intended to implement decisions of MINMAC. And it is before we report to MINMAC, procedurally we have to report to the TIC, so that we have a coordinated response with respect to the issues that the Minister and MEC have raised to us on a policy matter. The Policy Review Committee is a structure that was established by the TIC, as we have indicated. It's actually composed of people drawn from different provinces. We have the members drawn from a Northwest, one of the chief directors, who's a member of the Policy Review Committee, comes from Northwest, the chief director there. And then we have got Poncho Madelana, who's coming from Mpumalanga, I think. There's also a member from Gauteng. And then we have Sis Rosemary in front of me, who is the chief director of in the DAC, who's in charge of social development and youth. And you also have Bazima, who is also from the DAC. And I have been asked to chair that policy review committee. So the DAC is leading in terms of ensuring that the committee has to carry out the mandates as reflected in the presentation. The second thing that we may need to indicate is right to the broad consultation. As indicated in the presentation, this mandate came in February 2005, and we've held at least 6 provincial consultations. And those consultations culminated in the national workshop that we have referred to in our presentation. They tended to reflect various stakeholders, and we called in departments, both national and provincial, as well as the South African representatives of the OSCALGA, the South African Local Government Association. There were representatives from the Office of the Presidency, for instance, because the issues that we were dealing with in this review were issues that, as members have indicated, are cross-cutting, but also they deal with the national priorities of government. There were also representatives from the Department of, from HEAP, Environment and yes, at a national level. We had representatives from the Department of Education, for instance, DPLG, and a number of other departments that we felt, including correctional service, that we felt that the arts and culture policies had an impact on their respective legislation tended to affect the implementation of the policies that we sought to review. So those kinds of meetings or workshops involved a lot of participants, including members from civil society that were part of those workshops. So to the extent that the inputs made tended to reflect the various views, we think we have made sufficient consultation. We also placed the discussion document, which was actually the product of these various workshops. That was placed on the website for the various stakeholders to further make their contribution in that regard. The third issue that I would respond to briefly, DG and Comrade Chair, relates to the memorandum to the partnership with different departments. I think the various members who are here from the department will also be able to make specific references in that regard. One of the issues that emanated from the national workshop was to the effect that we needed to revisit specific memoranda that we had already put together with various national departments in order to ensure that the partnership that the DAC has
initiated with the different departments is actually realized. For instance, we agreed. The Policy Review Committee actually drew or developed a program of action for implementation by the DAC. And it was indicated, for instance, that we needed to ensure that on the issue of intellectual property rights, of property issues and legislation, there is a memorandum of agreement that is actually established between the DAC and the DTI, an issue that the DG had referred to. The issue of cultural diplomacy, which the DG also referred to, was encapsulated in our program of action to be dealt with in consultation with the Department of Foreign Affairs. The question of how do we ensure that the cultural development process and the IDR Act is actually implemented right up to local government level was referred to as an issue that we needed to discuss and affected that we implement a memorandum of agreement with DBLG. The education department, Rosemary here may deal with the art education in particular, the relationship that we actually already have with that particular department. But what was emphasized during the policy review workshop was that we already have a memorandum of agreement with the Department of Education, which seeks to deal with the status of the arts, culture and heritage in formal education. And we just need to ensure that there is that cooperation that spread or that is extended to informal education as well. And that became one of the critical issues that had emerged during that time. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Maybe before we continue, I realize that we have some additional officials from the department whom I believe have to introduce themselves.
My name is
Our staff members, which I believe you meet them time and again. You know them already. Thank you.
I believe that
some have those certain vibes that it is said about this the response unless we have been in question three and four. Before the second presentation, I would like to advise the members at least to stretch up and the officers to stretch your legs for 7.5 minutes.
I like it when 7.5
We must ring a bell at 7.
We give more time to the questions, believing that the presenter has a better question. And then presentation will be 10 minutes and 40 minutes for questions. Is it okay, D.D.?
It's fine, man.
Oh, I don't know who's presenting. Oh, what is the presenter?
I'll be doing the presentation.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And I'm going to go over this one quite quickly. And the contents of the presentation will deal with policy development, but we have already dealt with policy development and the heritage in the white paper, the need for policy and legislative review, the expected outcomes of the review, the pieces of legislation that are under review, the consultative processes, the key policy challenges that are emanating out of this legislative review, and look into general recommendations, major legislative challenges, and the way forward. Of course, the purpose of the presentation is to brief the committee on the legislative review process. As I've already alluded to, the point of departure is really the Arts and Culture White Paper of 1996, and that the White Paper, although it is an elaborate and ambitious document, it is generally biased towards the performing arts with little attention to heritage matters. In some instances, the White Paper mainly reinforced the prevailing status quo of the time, for example, on the National Monuments Council and the National Geographic Names Division. The White Paper emerged with innovative and creative approaches on the role of museums, the preservation and promotion of living heritage, the creation of the National Heritage Council, and the transformative role of the Geographic Names Council. However, there is a disjuncture between the attention given to heritage in the White Paper and the actual size, responsibility, and number of legislations that were promulgated since 1994 as a direct consequence of the White Paper. Because of that, of the recommendations of the White Paper, Heritage came up with 11 new legislation, and the other areas of the Arts and Culture came out with two specific legislations, and that was the National Arts Council and the National Film and Video Foundation Act. The need for policy and legislative review, I'm not going to go over that because we have already talked about that. This was just a broad government mandate that was given to all government departments to look at. Now, I think the first challenge that we are faced with in terms of the legislative review is a question of the repatriation, because repatriation is both assigned currently to the National Heritage Resources Act and to the National Heritage Council Act. The second matter that is going to come up in the legislative review is that which comes under the Cultural Institutions Act, Article 12, and the National Heritage Council Act, Article 10.1e, that seems to create duplication in terms of coordination of the heads of institutions. This is a matter of duplication, actually. The National Heritage Resources Act, Act 25 of 1999, Article 23, it provides for the establishment of provincial heritage resources authorities, but that is not implemented as intended. Honorable members, I didn't present you the pieces of the act because I just thought you were just briefing here. The white paper pronouncements that were not implemented also pertain to the issues of the intangible heritage, but we are already in the process of ratifying the Convention on Intangible Heritage, and that will be the briefing next week. And in the white paper, The white paper called for South African Heritage Resources Agency to be a sub-program of the National Heritage Council. Now, the South African Geographical Names Council also was supposed to be a unit of the National Heritage Council, and then there's still an outstanding matter in terms of the grading of declared cultural institutions. So one of the things that you're going to find out is that the mandate of the National Heritage Council is that of a supra-organization. And the reality on the ground is that we have got, it's actually not a situation that is doable. And so we have got to have to look at the mandate of the National Heritage Council and begin to focus it a little bit more and also ensure that the mandate of the South African Heritage Resources Act and other specific acts are also tightened. I want to go. Therefore, the expected outcomes of the legislative review are four. It's the elimination of divergence, duplication, and inconsistency. It's a gap analysis of heritage policy and legislation so that we can close that gap. Identification of solutions and proposed amendments to the legislation. And then propose amendments to the white paper, but to this policy review process that we're talking about. Now, the legislation which is under review, it's Heraldry Act number 18 of 1962. I said 1964, so I was 2 years behind. It's 1962. It's the Culture Promotion Act number 35 of 1983. It's the National Archives and Record Services of South Africa Act of 1996. It's the Legal Deposit Act of 1997, the National Library for the Blind Act of 1998, the National Library of South Africa Act, the Geographical Names Council Act, Cultural Institutions Act, NHC Act, National Heritage Resources Act, which is the SARA Act, and the National Council on Library Information Services Act of 2001. I think it is correct to already put up front the consultative processes. The consultative processes include a series of consultative meetings with stakeholders. We have consulted with national departments, provincial departments, declared cultural institutions, and NGOs. We have had 17 consultative meetings. We were held between 20th of July 2006 and 9th of March 2007. Six meetings were held with appointed reference group between the 3rd of November 2006 and the 14th of December 2007. Records of these meetings are contained in the volume 2 of the consultant's report, which we will table later, not now. Stakeholders were provided with an opportunity to submit written comments to the process. I think one of the things that are going to come up as we are doing the legislative review is that there tends to be little community participation when we're dealing with initiatives of formulating heritage policies. So we're going to need to find a way of looking at the concurrent framework between the national government and the provincial government so that we can ensure broader participation in the policy formulation. Communities, it's a concern. There is a little participation. We saw a little bit of that improved when we're dealing with the intangible policy conference. One other matter that we're going to need to look at, a policy challenge that is going to emanate from this legislative review, is that there is no national museum policy. And we actually need to have a national museum policy, so that we can determine why certain museums are in the national, why are certain in national, and why are certain in provincial. But there's no national museum policy. That's the thing. And also we need to have a policy with regards to new monuments and memorials, because this then leads to the framework for the legacy project, because there is no policy framework at the present moment on legacy projects. One matter which is very sensitive and which we're going to need to address is the question of exhumation, reburial, and human remains policy. And the minister has been trying to convene some meetings on this, and so that we can come up with policies. And what we are finding is that even within political parties, there are different opinions when it comes to the questions of exhumation, reburial, and human remains policies. And this also then starts to impact not only on what we are doing inside the country, but, for example, the how we are conducting cultural diplomacy with neighboring countries. For example, some families would say we want to repatriate the remains from Zambia, from Angola, or Mozambique. And and one minister of culture from the said the countries raised an issue and said, but why are we removing these graves? Because these graves are there not by accident. They are markers of a particular historical moment in the history of the region. Are we erasing that history? You know, and these are the issues and that are coming up that we need to engage with. Identifying and commemorating victims of conflict policy. We have seen this thing coming up and whose name come up in Freedom Park. And these are the issues that are coming up now, issues of national debate, national conversation. And there is a very pertinent issue that we need to deal with, which is the issue of the public interest copyright exceptions policy. And this pertains to the Legal Deposit Act. And because we want to enforce exceptions policy in the Legal Deposit Act, particularly to ensure that people with disabilities and, for example, people who are blind can be served better. We are unable to serve them now because the Legal Deposit Act and the copyright regime at present is hampering us from doing that. As I said earlier on, DTI is really only focusing on patents. But we want to look into the World WIPO, World International Property Rights Organization, and because WIPO intends to entrench exceptions, but we want to look at the constitutional framework and the human rights argument to advance our argument for exceptions policy. But when we are applying the exceptions policy, we won't be doing a very broad exceptions policy. It will be a very specific exceptions policy, and it will be specifically directed at people who are not able to see, people who are blind. And then, of course, the issues of research and development policy would come up. And policy challenges and gaps that come out of this process. They look at the building and sharing of intellectual capital policy, which we do not have. For example, there's a lot of research that is done in our institutions, in our museums, and it hasn't got a framework. Access to heritage resources and institutions policy, funding of heritage institutions, and these ultimately the legacy project policy. But we have just looked at policy gaps that we're going to have to address as we do the legislative review. Now, general recommendations, which is slide 12, and I'm going to go through them quickly. there are some recommendations which have got some political implications which need to be discussed. The one, for example, is the question of access to heritage institutions. That South Africans themselves, people who are living in Kupuletu, cannot afford to go to Robben Island and Lango. And so, therefore, people do not have access to their own history and heritage. How do we begin to address that? Do we have to subsidize, and how do we subsidize? There is another one, abolishment of provincial representations on councils. One of the things, this is going to be a nice cohort political one. Because when you look at the South African Heritage Use of Resources Agency, is that the majority of the members of that council are appointed as provincial representatives, and the minister then appoints five. But what happens is that when we want to get the names of provincial representation, we cannot get those names, you know, and then court actions come in. We're being taken to court because the council is unable to meet, is unable to issue permits. So the non-performance by the provincial government is leads to court cases at a national level. And I don't think that was what was desired when people said that there should be provincial representation into the council. So we're going to have to find ways of addressing appropriate intergovernmental agreements and fora to reach this. And some of our councils are really absolutely cumbersome. But I think those are just general recommendations that we need to look into. On slide 13, one of the things that is quite interesting that we're going to need to look at is the harmonization of salary structures and institutional procedures and processes, because our CEOs, when you look at our CEOs, I mean the structure of the salaries are just quite something. It would be nice to be able to present to you what CEOs of heritage institutions earn in the country. And it will also be good to look at pre-1994 institutions, the salary structures, the post-1994 institutions, the salary structures. But there is also a disjuncture between the salaries of the CEOs and the middle management and so forth. So the gaps, you know, and there's no policy guidelines in terms of how people are supposed to be earning. And it's going to raise a lot of noise, but I think it's something that needs to be addressed. Otherwise, we can find ourselves in a situation where there is some little bit of anarchy. Slide 14. I don't know if we'll be able to measure legislative challenges and a call for constitutional amendment and also amendments of government matters to authorize the minister to appoint selection committees to advise and oversee the appointment of appropriate persons to serve as members of governing bodies in our institution. And these are all the suggested amendments that will then be carried through in terms of the Cultural Institutions Act. And nothing really controversial on slide 15, more than just honing in on specifics. And on South African Geographical Name Council Act, there are a number of things that we need to look at there. This act is one act that has been a source of controversy, and the geographical name, place, and all of that. And so it does need to be looked at with a bit of attention. We are proposing that the minister should be given greater regulatory mandate over geographical names outside of national competence to allow for consistency and standardization and guidelines in name changes. Transparent procedure for the consideration for approval and revision of names, including a requirement for consultation. And one of the things that comes up now, every name that gets proposed, it tends to be challenged in court. And the basis of challenge is consultation. And so we need to be able to ensure that processes of consultations are well articulated in the legislation. Existing appeal procedure needs to be replaced with a requirement that the minister must follow a notice and comment procedure before deciding on approval or rejection of a proposed name change. The Act doesn't empower MECs now to establish provincial geographical names councils. We want them to empower them to do that. The provincial geographical names councils must be able to consider and verify applications for name changes and to support local authorities. And this is an area of weakness that we have been identified in terms of geographical names. Those are the critical ones. In terms of the National Heritage Council Act of 1999, we need to revise the composition of the council and the mandate of the National Heritage Council. The composition of the council is huge. I think we have got 47. It's a mass meeting. It's not a board. And it needs to be looked into. And of course, the mandate is too broad as well. And so the new role, number three, the new role, we want to define a new role and mandate for the National Heritage Council. We want it to commission and fund heritage research that builds a knowledge base. We wanted to promote, fund, and mentor and monitor heritage projects. And we want to establish an intergovernmental forum between the Heritage Council and appropriate provincial and local structures. And we want to remove the responsibility for repatriation from the National Heritage Council and locate it within the ministry rather than the Department of Arts and Culture. Because the issue of the repatriation has got very also serious political considerations that need to be factored into, and the National Heritage Council does not have that political mandate to be able to carry those things through. Similarly, with the Heritage Resources Act, we want to amend the core function. And we want to say that the role of the South African Heritage Resources Agency should be to manage the national estate, assist in the formulation of policies, setting standards and monitoring implementation of policy, building of capacity, should be a national center of excellence in the field of conservation, and setting in place the procedures and structures that will effectively conserve the heritage of all South Africans. And then establishment of trust. But what you will see here is that you will see that you are looking at the issues of preservation, conservation, skilling, and we're saying Sarah must deal with those things. And we're saying National Heritage Council must look into the questions of funding, engaging with a broader civil society, looking at knowledge base and capacity and research. And then, in terms of the amendments to the National Library of South Africa, the objects of the National Library should be extended to include building a knowledge society, promotion of multilingualism, lifelong learning, information literacy, and cultural reading. The National Council of Library and Information Services Act, we want to extend the objectives, determine terms on which public libraries, SA Library for the Blind, public archives, and places of legal deposit may circumvent digital rights and management of features of work where copyright owners refuse or fail to make copies available for the effective implementation of public interest copyright exceptions. And these are the exceptions I was talking about in the Legal Deposit Act. So there's going to need to be an alignment between the Legal Deposit Act and the National Council of Library and Information Services Act. Then, the South African Library for the Blind Act. the most significant one, we want to extend the function of the library so that it could be a legal deposit for materials in alternative formats. And that really talks to the issues of people with disability. The Legal Deposit Act of 1997, I've already addressed myself to that. Then there's the question of the National Archives and Records Services Act, and this is the Act of 1996. I think what is important is point number three, that we need to, that there should be an alignment between the National Archives and Act and with the Promotion of Access to Information Act, because the Promotion of Access to Information Act kicks in after the 1996 Act of the National Archives Act. So there needs to be an alignment there, as well as explicit reference to the National Film and Video and Sound Archives is required, and that's about legal deposits. One issue, honorable members, that might come up here is going to be the question of the limitation, and it's going to be a political one, is whether at the present moment the National Archives Act says that it gives a limitation of 20 years to certain records before those records could be opened up for researchers and things like that. Let's just say for public scrutiny. And there is a general trend or feeling or thinking that 20 years is not enough. We need to extend it to 30 years. And we are also looking at other National Archives Act internationally, and the general trend and pattern looks at 30 years. So we're gonna, we will come to the portfolio committee with a proposal that there should be an extension of 10 years over the current limitation of 20 years. And it's got all kinds of implications, of course, and that proposal might people would say no, we are delaying, and access to information is not in line with Access to Information Act. That perhaps 30 years is too much, but there are also on the other side some really challenges and pertaining to sensitive records of state, and starting with the TRC and so forth. So it is a matter that actually does need to be addressed. Page 24, Heraldic Act of 1963. We actually need to start afresh. This is such an outdated act, it's not funny. So we need a new act is actually required, and which would be a National Symbols Act. And the current act is outdated, and requires substantive amendments. Now the new act, Heraldic Act, or what we might call the National Symbols Act, because the present Heraldic Act does not adequately protect the national symbols. and the national symbols require adequate protection. But we also want to put the new act to provide for protection of indigenous heraldic symbols. We want to, the use of modern and African designations. We want an updated register of heraldic representations, names and uniforms, objections and appeals against decisions of the state heraldry, damages and penalties for unlawful use of symbols, offences put in systems for offences in respect of national symbols, as well as the general governance of matters. The current Act, Heraldic Act of 1962, really draws this from its philosophical point of departure from the Middle Ages, truly. Because heraldic activity starts from there. And you can see that as you read the Act, that there is nothing that actually deals with the reality of today. So that's why that the Act needs some overhaul. So the recommendations is that amendments on governance matters and institutions should be effected. That technical and administrative corrections will be effected. Timetable for development of policy of identified policy gaps and challenges will be done by the department. Amendment of legislation with substantive policy formulation, we can deal with those as long-term projects. Way forward, technical, administrative or minor policy decisions to the Act will be drafted and submitted to Minister, Cabinet and Parliament for approval. Legislative amendments with major policy implications will be tabled for public consultation by legal services in cooperation with will be done by the Department of Arts and Culture. Printing and public dissemination or legislative review report. Now, our understanding with regard to this, honorable members, is that in terms of I'm just looking at the legislative timetable. Oh, yes. Is that we will, in terms of the legislative program of 2008, is that we will be able to push these amendments under the Cultural Laws Third Amendment Bill, which is date of submission is what is January, and date of submission to Parliament is April 2008. Now, I hope that that is our understanding as well, and that is your understanding as well, and that we have been given a choice to say whether we're going to be pushing because of the political calendar. There is an issue that we need to resolve in terms of which bills are going to go through. But to us, we are thinking that most of the amendments that were here and can be pushed under the Cultural Law Third Amendment Bill. And I don't know if my colleague might want to add.
Thank you, Didi. Just on the legislative program, Madam Chair and honorable members, we received a notification from the Leader of Government Business to prioritize the legislation in light of the shortened parliamentary program. And we had come then with the two bills. The main and primary bill will be the Cultural Law Third Amendment Bill, which will seek to amend the heritage legislation. And then the Language Professions Council Bill has served before a cabinet, and the cabinet's recommendation was that the department go back to the Treasury on a business case for the council. How are we going to establish the council? So in light of that, it might be prudent that we withdraw the Language Professions Council Bill from the current program and concentrate only on the Cultural Law Third Amendment Bill for the Heritage Commission. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. What is the main reason of withdrawing the
Madam Chair, it's still a work in progress in terms of getting guidance from the Treasury on how to structure the Professions Council. Although there has been a document done through consultation and through a consultant,
there still needs to be a detailed engagement in terms of the issue of whether it will be a public entity, and we will need to seek guidance from the Treasury on the listing and on all the obligations that we'd have to comply with in terms of the PFMA.
Thank you very much, Comrade Chair. Just a point of clarification here. On the question of abolishment of provincial representation on cancer, well, I seem to understand the problem that the department is facing, but seem to have a problem as to where this would be the solution. Abolishment would be the solution. But I need to clear myself very quickly whether the representation is from the department or it's simply private people in the province. That might maybe make a difference in terms of what I was thinking. But the question is that the right solution to the problem? Wouldn't maybe some punitive measures be introduced within maybe the Act itself to deal with those that are not attending meetings? Maybe that might be the solution, unlike abolishing the representation itself. But according to me, I think it's important. If I was to give an example, say if a person comes from a Venda or a Shangan speaking area, that person has got an idea of the cultural dynamics of that province. So if you abolish that, it might give us a bit of problem. I'm not very sure whether that is very clear. One other question on slide number 9. I'm talking about 6 meetings that were held with the appointed reference group. I would like to understand who is this appointed by whom, so that it can make sense to me. With the appointed by the department, and then after that you hold meetings with them. I don't feel good. I think for now, those two questions, I will have those two on. Thank you, Congress.
Thank you. Maybe it's in addition to what, even though I'm a little bit covered by your question, that the composition of the council, really, one has a question on it. He has already covered me. Honorable the title.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, I would like
to align myself with what Master Mark has said on the abolition program for representation on campus. People who are not attending meetings need to be educated, need to be educated and be shown the seriousness of attending meetings. My second question is on community-based heritage initiative policy. I don't know whether I heard you correctly. When dealing with the matter, you mentioned national and provincial governments in playing part and excluding the local government. I want to know why the exclusion of local government. Thank you.
Anyone who is a second bite? In the absence of second bite, I will now be waiting for your response. DJ?
Thank you, Chairperson. The first one is how many provincial heritage resources agencies there are. It's one per province. Yes. And the question of representation from the provinces. What actually happens is that you find that the Act asks that the MEC of the province should appoint a person to serve at, say, in this case, at the South African Heritage Resources Edasara Council. And then the MEC would recommend that name to the minister. And, of course, the minister is the one who appoints in consultation with cabinet. Just a little bit of background here. As I said, one of the things that is of a serious challenge is the fact that at times 6 to 7 months go by without getting a name from the provinces to serve on this council. And therefore, you find that the new councils cannot correlate and therefore cannot meet, and unable to take decisions. And then that has got its own consequences, legal actions and so forth, that have been taken against the minister at the national level. But there's also quite a peculiar thing about this thing, is that at times the provincial representative never go back to the MECs to report to the MECs about what they are doing in these structures. Because at times it's actually that they've been appointed by the minister, so therefore they do not owe an explanation or answer to the MECs.
Yeah.
So, these representatives become dislocated somehow. And that's another matter that we need to address. Probably is the one, because I know that when it comes to the provinces would say, let's not abolish, but let's touch in on the issues of accountability, you know, on these matters. And it's a matter that like really affects delivery in a great way. Is abolition the only way? And at times one needs to start at the extreme to arrive because I think if you're going to start at punitive measures, I'm not saying that we cannot consider them. I think we can and we must consider punitive measures, but at times, the punitive measures that we come up with, they end up, honorable member, I don't know how to put this without, they become like toothless bulldogs. They're just there
to scare, but they do not actually bite. And so it would be good if we're talking about punitive measures, it would be punitive measures that can actually really bite. Because in a number of situations in our legislation, not only the Department of Culture, now I'm talking across government, is that the punitive measures that are in place are actually ineffective, and people can very much easily ignore them. But we cannot rule them out. The reference group was appointed by the minister, and it took on some of the board members who are serving in heritage institutions, some people with legal backgrounds, some academic backgrounds in heritage. So it was really a reference group that was appointed by the minister, and its term ends with that tabling, I suppose, of the legislation through to Parliament. Last one is that honourable members, really there is no exclusion. I think that if there is any exclusion, the exclusion is a linguistic exclusion rather than a political exclusion. I'm saying this because one of the trends that I was highlighting that because one of the trends that is happening in the country is that when we're having these policy workshops, we are conducting them in English, we're excluding people, legislative framework. I was just trying to say we need to be more sensitive, you know, particularly when it comes to the issues of heritage, because it's something that people identify, it's a basis of identification, of self-identification. Is heritage, and of course it is also the basis for national identification. So one needs to be able to ensure that there is as broader a buy-in as is possible. But it's not a matter of government. It's just that we don't know. We need to find ways of increasing participation by communities in all policy forums. And that's the reality. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Maybe I'm not representing you as far as representation is concerned. Mm. You can't really imagine a traditional leader, a traditional healer, being represented by a professor from the university. Mm. Who is doing whatever, which is really irrelevant to this line of function. I think let the number be increased for people to be represented, stakeholders to be represented. Otherwise, we'll be fighting a losing battle. Said the previous members don't have any third and second bites. What? Oh.
A question on the South African geographical name country. It is said here, slide number 16. Preliminary position is that it needs to remain a secretariat of the minister. I think that is what it is now.
Yes.
Okay. I was just interested to how was this situation reached? And mainly, just a question still on this. I realized that provinces are not moving at the same pace in terms of this. And it's a tricky situation because there's no way in which you can tell provinces to start changing names because then people must adjust to what they want. So if a province doesn't come up with suggested name changes, then nothing will happen because people themselves must decide whether they want names to
change or not. But at the background of the whole of the thing, I think, subject to correction, personally, these names must be changed. They are actually not being changed. They have been suppressed, so you just take the suppress out and the real name will remain this. So is there any mechanism of saying provinces? Let's hear from you what do you say, because we already know that this is fine. I'm not very sure whether my question is very clear when it comes to that. Thank you very much.
Still very adding to what Honorable Mark has raised on the issue of renaming of the places. One can imagine a province like KZN, which has a name and a surname. Names like Mr. Makado and Dr. Rata. They have good history. But it means nothing when you call that place Dr. Rata. It inflicts the pain to the people. That the people will see that time. So I'm just adding an example. So I think you let people talk really. And we as a department be serious about it. Because it can sometimes at a later stage affect people's lives.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. The issue of name changes is a very sensitive one, and one which is actually misunderstood in the country. And I think it is misunderstood because we as government were not as assertive in the leadership as we could have been in terms of name change. And the reason for that is partly because the act itself says the initiative should come from the communities, not from government. And also because we must also remember that the actual approval of the name rests within the ministry. So the ministry could not be a referee and a player in the process. And that kind of hamstrung us a bit. But being in that situation and understanding that nature doesn't allow for a vacuum, when there's a vacuum, other things will come and fill in the vacuum. And what fills in that vacuum became political discussions that were going this way and that way, and not actually addressing what was the public policy on name changes. Because the public policy on name change was that of saying, was answering a question which says, how do we effect redress on the heritage landscape of South Africa? That's the question that was being answered. But then, what has happened is that the answer to that question did not come back in a policy form. It came back in a political form. And then it created contestation, which was now playing itself out. I'm talking like this because I think it's important for the members to get our perceptions on this matter. And so one of the things then that happens is that we are slowly moving towards a situation where whichever name that is being proposed for change, there is this mobilization to challenge that name in court. And there's nothing wrong with going to the court because they are the legitimate institutions of democracy. But I think that it is important that as a nation, we should have conversations
outside of the court, you know, in terms of heritage, landscape, and national identity. And we have appointed a new geographical name council, which was put in place in November, and not October. And one of the things that it's supposed to do, starting this month of February, is to go on a roadshow throughout all the provinces to explain the processes, to explain the policy, and hopefully people would then take ownership of the process of geographical of the geographical name change. But this matter is a matter that has also been identified as one of the apex of priorities of government. And I will leave it at that, ma'am. Thanks.
Thank you very much, DG and your team. We are so thankful really that this also had a homework to take home, to convince our people, or to guide them as far as this name, geographical name is concerned, somehow, somewhere. This afternoon, by at 2 o'clock, we'll be having a briefing by this the tech at 2 o'clock, same venue, which the presenter has already explained that I think before 12 o'clock or somewhere there, he was busy with the minister. He didn't get after that meeting, he will be briefing us. One would like to ask if maybe the department officials would like to listen to the presenter. If not, it's not a matter of mark, depending on your transport or whatever. It will be, after lunch will be coming here again to listen to that. So this brings to the end of our meeting today. I think before maybe you come in, the secretary and logistics will come online.
Thank you, Chair. Lunch will be served at Mark Building, and everybody in this committee room is welcome. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and Honourable Member. Just to apologise for next week. There will be a briefing next week on Tuesday on the convention, and I will ask my colleagues to be here to handle that briefing. I'm unable to attend because I'm chairing the African World Heritage Fund, and we are preparing a report, a UNESCO report that must go to the African Union Head of State. So I'm not going to be able to be here next weekend, next Tuesday, but the briefing will take place. My colleagues, my other DGs, and will be here.
Thank you very much. We'll hear what you bring us back.
Yes. No, but we must start from that one, so that by the time we get into punitive measures,
No, not yet.
Let's have lunch.
Thank you.